Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Andrew. I am an alcoholic. Could everyone please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to a silent profile, and please try to keep disruptions to a minimum. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In view of our singleness of purpose, we respectfully ask that sharing be confined to alcoholics, and when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. There may be visitors here who are unfamiliar with our tradition of anonymity. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio and television. This tradition is a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We are sure that anonymity is the greatest safeguard Alcoholics Anonymous can ever have. We therefore seek your cooperation in protecting the anonymity of our members at the public level. The format of tonight's meeting will be 3 10-minute speakers, followed by a 4th speaker until approximately 8:30. The meeting will then be open for sharing from the floor and close at 9 o'clock. Can we have a moment's silence to remember Tradition 5? Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Thanks, everyone. I'd now like to introduce tonight's final speaker, Chris.
Thank you. And, my name's Chris, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
And it's always, I get such a warm welcome when I come back to Plymouth, and Plymouth is where I found this solution, and I thank you all for that warm welcome. Always, your arms are always open to me, and I'm really grateful for that. Now, I was sat there, and I got the 12 steps in front of me, and I was looking at it, and the first time I came into a meeting, you know, I couldn't read the 12 steps because I couldn't read. This time, the 12 steps were in front of me, and I couldn't read them because I didn't have my glasses. And that made me think about my time kind of scale that I've kind of been around. You know, I actually came into this fellowship at a young age of 19, and I now have had more life experience of not drinking than I ever have of drinking all life before I came here. And what do I know about drinking? I know very little about drinking, to be honest with you. Yeah, I shared this so much I'm bored of my own share. You know, I bore myself with it. But it's just the truth. It's just the way it was. I remember a little Christmas, and they had these chocolate liqueurs at Christmas time, and it was like a family thing. The family and all the friends, all the adults, the big people were getting drunk and merry and enjoying themselves. And I was a little kid, so I ate this top layer of chocolate liqueurs. And I made myself violently, physically sick. I mean, I was all over the floor, all over the trifle, all over the chicken. It was everywhere. Yeah. When I suddenly kind of like I woke up, something else happened. I guess what this person did. I went back and I ate the bottom layer of the chocolate liqueurs, and the same thing happened again. Little did I know this was going to be the story of my life until I came to these rooms. And the story was simple, that once I started, I couldn't stop. That's pretty much all I know. So to tell you what I know about drinking is very little. What I do know is that by the time I got to these rooms, I had fully conceded, absolutely fully conceded. I was a broken human being when I came into these rooms. And I had no idea. I was confused and I was frightened. I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't understand that my family didn't want me. I didn't understand how people could not like me. I was baffled by that. I thought I was wonderful. You know, I couldn't understand that the party wasn't still going on. You know, I mean, my idea of a good night out, this was ingrained in me 100%, was if I remembered it, something was wrong. It could not have been a good night. You know, if I don't remember it, I was like, wicked, what a night I had. What a night, I don't remember it. You know, it was like, how do I know what a night I had? But I came in here and the thing that they said was keep coming back, and I had nowhere else to go, and I was homeless, and I was living on the street in Plymouth, bus station as it happens. The first meeting I went to, I identified with these people talking about how they just lived to drink. That's all they did. That's all they thought about. That's all they did. I was like, yeah, that's me. Yeah, I'm one of them. I get that. I identify with that. I'm really, really with that game. I'm them. And they said, and then they went on and said, you have to get a sponsor. And I was like, get a sponsor. And so I chose, for my first choice of sponsor, someone who was still drinking. And he said yes. And I thought, I really identify with this guy. He's still drinking. You know, and that didn't work out so well. My second choice of sponsor was somebody who had stopped drinking, but he always shared about drinking. So I asked this guy to be my sponsor, and he went back drinking, and that didn't work out so well. This went on for 4 sponsors. You know, but I kept coming back. You know, I kept coming back. And during this time, I mean, there were some things that were starting to change. I remember there was one time down at Plymouth bus station, and it was cold. It was I don't know what time of year it was. It was winterish time. And I was cold, and this old, somebody else was going into the rooms as well. We were sat there together, and he said, do you know what you need, Chris? You need some women's stockings. And I was like, what? And I was like, what are these women's stockings for? And he taught me, he said, well, if you put 2 women's layers of stockings underneath your trousers, it keeps your legs warm. And we made each other laugh. And we laughed all night. So we're homeless, you know, we're sober, and we haven't got a clue what we're doing, but we're laughing. Together, we're laughing. In Plymouth bus station, yeah, and I hadn't laughed for a long time. Yeah? And that was a moment. I don't know what that moment was, but it meant something to me. And then finally, it wasn't even my idea. This was not my idea. Finally, somebody else had an idea and said, "Why don't you ask a particular member to be your sponsor?" Now you know this moment. It's a moment when you know that this person really is going to get you doing something. I don't know. You don't know what it is. You don't understand it. I mean, this book has got some big words in it. I don't want, grant me the serenity. I don't know what that means. What does serenity mean? I haven't got a clue. Never had a clue. But I'll join in. I'll say, you know, we didn't hold hands back then. Actually, we just sat in a chair, and we're all too kind of like managed to hold hands and do any of that kind of stuff. At that moment where you're faced with this dilemma. You know this person has got the solution. Why? Because they're laughing. They're happy. They're passionate. They're living life. And you know that person could actually show you what all this stuff means. But there's that bit of you going, oh my God, what happens if it's true? What happens if actually, you know, everything that I've ever believed in and worshipped and lived was a lie? And they're going to take me somewhere else. I was terrified. You know, I shan't apologise. I shit myself, you know, literally by asking this person. And I asked this person, and you know the look, your head goes down, you mumble it out, we've been all over. Like, pardon? We've been my sponsor. And he wasn't one for making it easy. You know what I mean? It's like, we've been my sponsor. Like, pardon? We've been my sponsor. You're like, what are you trying to say? And he got me to look him straight in the face and ask him. You know, I couldn't look anybody in the face. You know, I'm walking around with shame, guilt, and all this stuff, and this, that, and the other. And he said yes, and he gave me a list of suggestions. And you know this list of suggestions that they hand out. And he gave it to me, and he told me to call him, when to call him, and this, that, and the other. And back then, there was no mobile phones and all that, so it was like down to the phone box and, you know, and make a call. And he would ask me these questions: have you done the suggestions? And you know you haven't. You know that feeling when your sponsor asks you, have you done these suggestions? You're like, I've done nothing. I've done absolutely nothing whatsoever. But I'm going to say to him, yes, I have. I'm going to lie. Why? To make him happy. You know, I don't want him thinking bad on me. Of course I've done them. And then straight after that, I'll go into a rant about all this remorse, unhappiness and sadness that's going on in my life. You know? And it's like, you know, he would then go, why don't you call me back once you've done all your suggestions? I'd be like, I've just told him I have. What does he mean by that? And we'd hang up and I would think about this. This would be in my thoughts. I'm like, you know, I told him we had, and he told me to go away and do them. And I said I had. I know I haven't done them, but I kind of still said to him, I have done them. Why didn't he believe me? He's an alcoholic like me, you see. That's why he didn't believe me. And this went on. We played this game, and for want of a better word, it was this kind of chicken game, you know, for quite a time. And then one day, I called him up, and before I said very little, he went, oh, you follow the suggestions. I was like, what the hell? There's got spies in this Alcoholic Anonymous. You know, they're watching me. How does he know? I pulled the shutters down when I got down on my knees. You know what I mean? I was embarrassed. I turned the lights off. How does he know I've done that? How does he know I followed these suggestions, all of them? You know, I've done them to the best of my ability. How does he know that? And it took me years to get the courage to ask him. And I asked him, he said, well, Chris, for the first time ever, instead of going into a rant about how all your problems and that, you actually asked me how I was. And that was quite a shock to me, that I had never thought of anyone else. I had never actually thought, how are other people doing? How's my mum doing? How's the rest of the world doing? I didn't have a clue. All I cared about was, this is my life and it's terrible, and how I was doing. I was fully, fully self-obsessed with my problems. And it started there. And he was a very gracious man, and the fellowship at the time were very gracious. They knew I couldn't read. And the interesting thing was, at primary school I could read, but in secondary school, which I didn't go to very much, I spent it drinking, I lost the ability to read and write. And they knew this, and they didn't judge me. I was embarrassed. I was hugely embarrassed and ashamed, you know, to not to be able to do this, these things. And they would slowly but surely take me through the basic texts of Alcoholics Anonymous, explaining all these words. I had to get humble to ask and go, yeah, third line down on page 60, whatever, it's like, this word there, I haven't got a clue. I haven't got a clue what it's saying. And they would read it to me. And the people would sit next to me and go, Chris, okay, let's have a look. Well, this bit here, I can see, you know, you're struggling with it. You know, what's you struggling with? I don't understand this bit. And they would help me. I learned to read. And the first thing I ever read, as somebody of an age of 19 or 20, was the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it took a long time. And I've still got the same text. And it's got different colour highlighted areas, because I've read it quite a few times. And then you end up with so many different colours and it looks like a rainbow when you open it. And then you've got no idea which bit is more important than the next bit. But I also found that getting a sponsor... Sponsors are a pain in the arse, aren't they? Aren't they just a pain in the arse? You know that you should have done something. They've given you a list of suggestions what you should do. And you know, you're going to do step 1, 2, 3. And then they give you step 4. I mean, oh my God, step 4. I've actually got to write. I've got to write something down. I've got to make an effort. It's like, surely, can't somebody just give this to me? And I didn't, you know, remember my step 4. This is how my sponsor caught me out. And this is why they're a pain in the ass. Right? He said, okay, do 4 a day. 4 resentments a day. Start with resentments. 4 resentments a day and write them down. Write down your feelings of ill will towards the world. And I had loads. You know, I was ready for this. But I could not write them down. I would always in my head go, do you know what? I won't do any today, but I'll do 8 tomorrow. And then it was like, well, I won't do any today, I'll do 12 the next day. Yeah. Then a week would pass, so you times a week by 4, you're up in like these high numbers now. And my sponsor would go, how are you getting on with your step 4? I'm going, blinding. He goes, well, bring it round. Just like that, bring it round. And I'm like, holy crap. And I'm quickly like trying to write it out and go through it and all this, that, and the other. And I actually managed, for the first time he viewed it, I think I'd written 2. And actually what I'd gone into was, what I was resentful at. I was resentful at this bloke who punched me in the face. What happened? I punched him in the face, he punched me in the face. And then, in my part, I'd given a description of all the justifications of why I punched him in the face. And there might have been a little bit of pride on my part. That was all I could come up with. That was my best shot at this. A little bit of pride. I actually wrote a little bit of pride. You know, after a four-page essay on all the reasons why that guy needed to be punched in the face. You know, and again, my sponsor was very gracious and was like, well, Chris, I don't think you quite got the hang of this thing just yet. You know, it's only up for your side of the street. I don't care about your reasoning, because your reasoning is insane. Your reasoning, basically, you know, you were pissed. You don't know what you were thinking right then. You don't know you're thinking it was deluded. It was off the scale. He said, just facts. Just the fact you hit somebody in the face. Okay, you're part in that. And write down these facts. And I hated doing that. I did, you know, because looking at it just reaffirmed in me my self-loathing and low self-esteem that I already had was now being proven to me in fact. And I felt really, really bad. My sponsor kept going, do you know, the reason we do this is, and this is what, again, oh, they're so annoying, sponsors, because they say this sort of stuff. You know, they go, you know, the reason we do this, Chris, is so that we can clear away, fact find, and then clear away our side of our street, and then we can do the reverse of these things and live a useful, productive, and healthy, and exciting, and valuable life. But when you're doing it, and you're looking at it, and you don't feel pretty good about yourself, and you're writing down these things, it doesn't feel like that. You know, it's a slog. And I've yet to meet anybody or I've had any sponsor who's breezed through that and not actually found that to be a slog. It is a slog. Facing the fact that I was a horrible human being. Alcohol turned me into a nasty, horrible human being who didn't know anything. And this was something where, again, it was talked about earlier, surrendering to this program. The one thing that I hated to hear, but my sponsor kept on saying it to me, he says, Chris, you've got absolutely nothing I want. I hated that. That used to just like bring me to my... just. I knew he was right. I knew I had nothing that anyone wanted. You know. And he used to say another thing as well that I used to just... used to annoy me. You know. Oh, by the way, I now say all of this to my sponsees. Yeah. So yeah, I annoy them just as much now. And he used to say, you know, Chris, you know nothing worth knowing. I reckon I spent months, maybe 6 months thinking about that on and off, thinking of an answer for that. There must be something in my life prior to coming here that is worth knowing. And the truth is there isn't. For me, there is nothing worth nothing knowing. You know, I knew nothing. I just drank. That's all I'd done. So we came through these steps. What happens when you come to the end of the steps? Yeah. Just people, he talks, you know, bigs it up in the book. You know, the basic text really bigs it up. You'll be set free. You will know a new life beyond your wildest dreams. So I'm like, I'm ready for this. I'm ready for this life beyond my wildest dream. It doesn't quite happen as I was expecting it to happen. You know, I was expecting it to happen that, great, I'm going to be loaded with money. I'm going to like get fast cars and have loads of women. You know, in my head, I had an island as well. You know, and this was like, beyond my wildest dreams, I'm going for it. You know, it didn't work out. And it came to a point where I was now off the streets and I was in a bed sitting, it's been paid for by housing, I was signing on sick. And I was volunteering for things in society and being productive, basically. You know, and I was enjoying it. I was really loving it. And I got offered a job. But the job was only 100 quid a week and it was at the Barbican Theatre, the little Barbican Theatre down here. It was only 100 quid a week. That's all they could afford, you know. And I call up my sponsor and I'm going, you know what, they've offered me this job down at the Barbican Theatre and I don't know if I want to take it. It's only 100 quid because after you take out of my housing and my benefits and that, I'm worse off. I'm only left with 20 quid. And I smoked as well at that time, you know, and it was like, so yeah, that's, you've got to take that into account, you know. And I'm like, you know, I think I should stay on the sick. And he asked me a question. He said, are you sick? Sponsors a pain in the ass. You know, I'm there and I'm going, no, there's nothing sick about me whatsoever. I am not sick. I'm not suffering. You know, I'm happy. I'm smiling. I'm productive. I'm all the things that this program promised. He said, well, then take the job. Get honest. You know, get honest. And I got honest. Within 2 weeks, they gave me a pay rise. They doubled my salary. Within 2 weeks, you know, within 2 weeks, I suddenly had more than I could believe. Within like a few months, it was the Theatre Royal started to bring me into some of their productions and that. Before I knew where I was getting offers all over the shop. You know, it just opened up. This world that I had been completely oblivious to suddenly opened up. And it's magical. And I know it sounds like, you know, especially if you're a newcomer, you're thinking, oh my God, you know, I mean, there's these steps and traditions and they've got this format and this book and this sponsor stuff and that. You're thinking all of that. But for me, it is truly magical. I now am free, and have been for a long time, to do anything I want. And I have done everything and beyond whatever I thought I wanted to do. And that includes things like make a complete balls up of the situation. I have done that in recovery, completely, 100%, wholeheartedly, put my heart and soul into, they call it a shortcoming, it's a polite word for a complete balls up. You know what I mean? And at that time, I know I'm going to be doing a balls up. I know it. You know, I'm on track. I've stopped calling my sponsor. I'm not doing everything daily. I'm not kind of like spirituality, not really kind of like, yeah, not right now. You know, right now is all about Chris and what Chris is kind of into. And he thinks he's got it sorted. And I mean, to put this into some sort of just sort of the balls up I've done, you know, I lost £2 million in my company and my house through one decision I made, which was based on I'm the man. I'm successful. I made this decision. I didn't ask. I didn't consult. I hadn't got to that part of my career where I should be actually making those sorts of decisions. I had no mentor. I had no wisdom about it. But I made it anyway because I thought I was the man. Yeah. So pride sneaked up on me again. And I lost it all. 2 days after I lost it all, and so I had to lay off staff and all the rest of this, that and the other. You know, it's the first time ever, I think yeah, it is the first time ever, and my sponsor called me. And he said, so what are you doing? And I was honest with him. I said, I'm in bed feeling a bit sorry for myself. He said, what have you got to feel sorry about? And I'm like, well, you know, I've just lost all this, that and the other. And he's going, when I first met you, you didn't have a lot, did you, Chris? You know, when I first met you, you were going on about like stockings and kind of like sleeping in the bus station down at Plymouth. Haven't you got a lot to be grateful for? And I'm thinking, for God's sake, give me a break. You know what I mean? Surely I deserve a break at this point. But he did exactly what I needed to hear. I got up, shook myself down. I accepted my shortcomings. I took my inventory and went, I was wrong. I was wrong. You know, I'd made a mistake. And with that, I then stepped out and corrected it. I went through everything that I had to legally, and I started, and I built it up all again. And I'm happy. You know, that experience taught me something. That experience, there's nothing to be ashamed of, you know what I mean, to be this kind of thinking that somehow, you know, going out into the life, you know, I'm living this spiritual journey and making a mistake. I don't feel ashamed about that. I feel enlightened. You know, there is, I think it's, I can't remember who said it, but somebody wise from old times, they said that, you know, to do something once, you know, is normal. It shows an inquisitive mind to do it once. You know, to do something twice, you know, could be seen as prudent. You're checking out, you're doing the right thing. To do it three times is you're insane. So that sums up our drinking. That sums up some of the things I've done in recovery. And what I've learned in recovery is to learn quickly. Open myself up to learning, to teachability. Am I teachable? Can I learn from my mistakes? Yes, I fall over. You know, yes, I make a mistake. Can I learn? And one of the greatest learning paths is making amends straight away when you've made a mistake or you've done something out of order. You know, so you're at work or you're doing whatever and you lose it with someone and you say a few things that you kind of wish you wouldn't. To begin with, when I started on this learning path, you know, I would call them whatever and walk away, not apologise, and I would stew about it for about a week. You know, mulling it over, going, somehow it was justified. Knowing damn right it wasn't justified. I was wrong. I was just behaving badly, you know. And then I would have to go and make amends a week later. Right, it's hard. Right, I felt embarrassed about that. Yeah. Then, you know, this learning curve, same thing will happen again. And it will take me 3 days. And then 2 days. And then 1 day. And then now, in my life, and for many, many years, actually, when I make a mistake, I apologize immediately. Right there and then, I go, that's just wrong. It's wrong to say that. It doesn't matter whether that person's doing a good job or not. It's wrong. And I just apologise. To be able to live in a place where, you know, when you're sat in an interview for a job or whatever, or, and you lie. A lie pops out. Yes, I can do that. Because you're enthusiastic. You want the job. You want whatever it is that you're going after. So you say, yes, I can do something I can't do. Well, I've done loads of times in recovery. But I have found that the jobs that they have been given to me were the jobs that I lied. And then immediately I went, I don't know why I lied, but I just have lied. I can't actually do that, but I'm willing to learn. They have always given me the job. You know? And there's me thinking, I've gone red-faced and I'm feeling embarrassed and it's like, you know, I know better than this. I've got spiritual principles, you know, and I'm lying to you that I can do something that I can't. And I admitted it. But I also then tell them I've got the willingness, or actually, I'll take one stage further, I've got the incentive to actually put in action to learn the qualities that you're looking for. And that brings me then beautifully to, that's probably been on for a long time, has it? Just started? Okay, lovely. But it brings me on to the spiritual aspect of this program. Well, what does that actually mean? Yeah, I thought it meant thinking, to begin with. Getting on my knees and thinking, you know, and saying a few prayers. And that has changed so much. Spirituality is action. It is pure and simple action. And what does action actually mean? You know, it means enjoying and living life to the full. Is there anything in life that you've never tried and there's no reason why you haven't tried? So, for example, abseiling, rock climbing, you know, reading a classic novel, to going to the theatre, going to the ballet, going to a desert island, going snorkeling, going diving, going sailing, going all these things, anything that you've never done, you know, and you have no experience whether you even enjoy it or not. The action I found was to have a go at everything. And I threw myself into this and I had a go at everything. You know? And even now, I mean, only like a few years ago, I took up basketball. And I was taught by 15, 16, 17 year olds teaching me. I'd never bounced a basketball in my life. Down at the park where I live in London, and these boys were teaching me how to play basketball. I loved it. That made me feel so kind of connected to society. I now have a relationship with these young lads, you know, and we talk, and we talk about issues of drinking and all the rest of this, that, and that, as well as issues of life. And it was the action of just having a go. If there's no good reason why you shouldn't try something, you know how we put off things? I mean, I used to put them off all the time, you know, I mean, I'll just stick to going to the snooker hall. I feel quite comfortable there. I feel uncomfortable going in and trying like martial arts or boxing or something where I'd never done it before. You know, I didn't do any sport as a kid, you can probably imagine. But, you know, I didn't try it before. I'd never been to the theatre before. I started my career in the theatre, you know. I've been around the world, you know. I've been and seen things and enjoyed things. The past, once I accept my defeat, which I did easily, you know, that I was beaten by alcohol, accept the solution and work it, it then gives me a chance to become a man, a true man. I drank because I couldn't grow up quick enough. I wanted to be a man. I wanted to be a man in the pub. I wanted to be one of these geezers who was down the clubs. Well, that didn't happen. No, I mean, I ended up, you know, just drunk, homeless, on the street without a family. I now truly know what it is to be a man, a grown-up, who is responsible, who actually wakes up and knows when it is time to actually get off and do stuff to help others. I know what it is to actually have a go at life. And even though I might be a bit nervous and frightened, I have a go. And I've become the man that I've always wanted to become through learning principles. And people often go, what are the spiritual principles? And they often ask me to talk about that. Spiritual principles are simply all in those 12 steps. If you do those 12 steps, you will learn them. And then when you practice them, your life will just explode before you, a world that you never saw before. And Plymouth, yeah, is where I got sober, and I'm grateful for every single member who was there then and is still here today. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.